Evolution by natural selection necessitates that intermediate, aka transitional forms, must have existed between prehistoric creatures and the animals that we know today. For birds, evidence of this missing link became apparent in 1861 when the fossil of a feather was discovered in Germany, later attributed to the species Archaeopteryx, a reptilian being with bird-like features. This fossil was dated back to the Jurassic period, over 100 million years ago. And what is particularly striking is just how similar it is in morphology to the feathers of modern-day birds. 12 body fossils of Archaeopteryx have subsequently been found in close proximity to the original discovery, and although more ancient as well as more recent transitional fossils have since been discovered, these being Anchiornis and Confuciusornis, respectively, Archaeopteryx remains the oldest known species to possibly be capable of powered flight. It is a crucial piece in our understanding of avian development. So, if you like birds, if you like knowledge, then my friend, you find yourself in the right place. Welcome to Blurbs, a podcast about birds. Hi, I'm Matt, bird enthusiast from New Zealand. Let's get into it. General body. Archaeopteryx are believed to have been just over 50 centimetres long and weighed around 1 kg. They possessed primitive features such as claws on their pair of wings, a long, bony tail, and teeth. Relative to body size, Archaeopteryx wings were shorter and broader compared with many modern birds, with the feathers creating the leading edge, the foremost part of the wing in flight, being tapered sharply. In contrast, a rounded leading edge, created by contour feathers in modern birds, is better able to manipulate the flow of air to generate lift, thus being more conducive to flight, more aerodynamic. As with on the wings, the body of Archaeopteryx appears to have been largely covered in feathers. However, there is a lack of evidence to either confirm or exclude them on the head or feet. Retroces, the name for tail feathers in modern birds, extended down the length of the bony tail. There were at least 35 pairs of these feathers, being longer at the hips, shorter at the base of the tail, and then progressively lengthening again towards the end of the tail. Although the general morphology of the Archaeopteryx feather is remarkably similar to that of modern birds, the differentiation we now see between arrangement and structure of feathers on different areas of a bird's body, facilitating different functions, was limited. Therefore, uniformity among feathers represents the ancestral condition. We see evidence of this from older fossils like Anchiornis as well. In contrast, we see feather morphology and layout have become more diverse as the avian lineage has advanced. I say these features were limited, but that isn't to say that they were non-existent. Archaeopteryx was on its way towards this type of diversification. Characteristics that are seen to be in line with modern birds include remiges, aka flight feathers, varying in morphology from proximal to distal, with the orientation of feather shafts matching modern birds in some locations, as well as the arrangement of feathers into separate tracks. Other similarities include regular spacing between individual feathers and the presence of a propetagium. This is the skin filling the space formed by the slightly bent elbow in birds. This functions to assist with flight. Feathers. I've mentioned a couple of times that an individual feather from Archaeopteryx is very similar to that of a modern bird. So let's expand. The basic blueprint we see in a feather today, including a central shaft The piece of this external to the bird is called the rachis, projections off this rachis called barbs, and then further smaller projections from the barbs called barbules. These features were all present in our fossilized friend. The cool thing about barbules is that they can interlock with one another like a zip, thus creating the seemingly uniform surface, the feathery bit, on either side of the shaft. Collectively, these areas are called the veins. Just like a zip, these barbules can be separated or interlocked by external force, hence why birds have to groom to zip or unzip these areas as appropriate. The presence of the structure in Archaeopteryx suggests grooming behaviour was performed in a similar fashion to that of modern birds. Feather adaptations relevant to flight that are seen in Archaeopteryx include 1. Curved rachii, plural of rachis. 2. Vein asymmetry, meaning that the vein on one side of the shaft has a different area or shape to the other, being caused by different lengths, angles, and curvatures of the barbs on the opposing sides. 3. The overlapping of feathers to create a continuous surface. And 4. The presence of melanosomes. These are the microscopic bodies that contain melanin, which, among other functions, increases the feather's resistance to external forces. The rachii of Archaeopteryx feathers were, however, more slender compared to modern birds, and just like in the case of feather type differentiation, although present, asymmetry of the barbs was less developed, i.e., they were more symmetrical than what would be seen today. So there have been some changes to the feather over evolutionary time, but the structure, by and large, has persisted for millions of years. Why is this? Well, some authors point out, quite logically, that the materials that are available to create biological structures and the physics of aerodynamics are no different between then and now. So even millions of years ago, there were already all of the factors necessary to craft feathers into a near optimal solution. There were just a few more tweaks to individual aspects that could be made, rather than a total revamp, to improve avian ability in the air. We talk about selection pressures when describing the external forces that cause evolution to go in one direction over another, and the function of flight itself is a selection pressure. We see this in how feathers show a wider array of morphologies when not being used for flight, either on birds that have evolved to become flightless, or feather types that are used for other purposes, such as display. Take the feathers of kiwi, or the tail of a peacock, for example. So feathers are capable of drastic change, just not if their function is flight. This blueprint was more or less down pat, even all those millennia ago. Flight capability. Now, most people in the know agree that Archaeopteryx was capable of some form of aerial locomotion, but whether this was in the form of passive gliding or powered flight, the flappy flaps, is what's up for debate. So let's look at the evidence. To start, it should be said that there has been no morphological variable documented from the feathers, wings, or body that would have prevented flapping flight. However, some key features seen in modern volant birds, aka birds capable of flight, were absent. These include an ossified keel. This is a bony ridge of the sternum where flight muscles attach. A muscular pulley system, which allows both a powered downstroke and upstroke of the wings, and a glenohumeral structure, also known as the shoulder joint, that would allow for supradorsal humeral abduction. From my knowledge of anatomy and movement, I believe this is referring to the wings extending outwards from the body, that's the abduction part, but also above the back of the bird, That's the supradorsal part. So, case closed. Archaeopteryx wasn't capable of powered flight. Right? Well, not necessarily. It just means that it could have flew differently and less efficiently compared to how birds fly today. Let's now look at the evidence supporting powered flight. From a skeletal point of view, Archaeopteryx possessed a furculum, a fusion of the collarbones, which is seen as an adaptation to brace the skeleton against the forces of flight. Adding to this is the finding of fusion of neural spines in the thoracic vertebral bones, aka the posterior portion of the midspine. This fusion was facilitated by ossified ligaments surrounding these structures. In modern birds, between 2 to 5 thoracic vertebrae are actually fully fused to make one rigid structure. We call this the notarium, and see it as an additional adaptation to help the skeleton withstand the rigors of wing-driven flight. Thus, although more rudimentary, Archaeopteryx possessed the early form of a notarium. Certainly, the presence of the structure indicates active use of the wings. However, some authors point out that this would also have developed if Archaeopteryx engaged in flap-assisted running along the ground. So it isn't a slam dunk for indicating powered flight. When investigating the properties of the bones themselves, however, we find further supporting evidence. Two measures, the relative cortical thickness of the limb bones and the mass-normalized torsional resistance of these same bones, can successfully distinguish between volant, a reminder this means able to fly, versus non-volant birds. The former relates to the thickness of the outer layer of bone, which is generally thinner in birds that can fly relative to those who can't. The latter relates to the strength of the bone, which varies based on what type of flight the bird engages in. To look further into the different flight strategies used by birds, I refer you to the Science of Birds podcast episode titled How Birds Fly. Both measures, taken from skeletal remains, place Archaeopteryx in the range of modern-day volant birds, but more importantly, indicate that it wasn't an obligatory wind-assisted flyer, i.e., it didn't need a certain level of wind to be able to take to the air, and that it most closely aligns with birds that fly in short bursts. Both of these suggest that Archaeopteryx was capable of powered takeoff and flight, even if this wasn't for any extended period of time. The torsional resistance properties of the fallen bones also show a different pattern of wing loading when compared to modern birds, and indicate that Archaeopteryx flew with a different flight stroke than what is seen today. This would help to explain the disparity we touched on earlier regarding joint and muscle structure. Furthermore, although movement of the shoulder joint was more limited than what we see in avian anatomy today, the joint was still more mobile than what would be expected for an organism specifically adapted to passive gliding. Zooming in now to the internal structure of Archaeopteryx bones, we see a vascular density, aka blood supply, in the range of modern birds. We also see pneumatic structures within the bones of the vertebral column. These are internal cavities that act as air sacs via a connection with the lungs, and this matches the level of pneumatization seen in some birds alive today. Both of these adaptations increase the metabolic performance of the organism to a level capable of powering flight, and the latter also helps to reduce overall weight, thus being conducive for flight. So, overall I'd say the skeletal evidence suggests that powered flight to some degree was possible for Archaeopteryx. Let's now look at feather and other wing properties to either support or refute this. First, the feathers. I mentioned in an earlier section how feather asymmetry is present in Archaeopteryx, and that this is seen as an important adaptation for flight. But why? Well, it's an adaptation to the asymmetric forces experienced during flight. The leading edge takes the brunt of the force of air, and so being more slender helps to increase its stability against this. Having a larger trailing edge allows overlap of the feathers, meaning that when air force is applied, it causes them to twist up against each other to form one more or less continuous and stable surface, a surface capable of generating lift, in other words, an airfoil. We see proximal feathers overlapping distal feathers on the wing, tail, and potentially even the legs of Archaeopteryx. This suggests not only the wings were capable of generating lift, but also that the tail and legs contributed as well. Some authors have suggested, however, that the feathered legs may not have served this purpose and were actually remnants of the four-winged creatures that preceded Archaeopteryx, such as Anchiornis. In either case, the asymmetric feathers of the wing and tail are strong indicators of flight, with this adaptation being minimal or absent in flightless birds, whereas it is seen in all birds that can fly. A final point relating to the tail is that it could have served as a horizontal stabilizer, helping to keep Archaeopteryx in the right orientation during flight. The general shape of its wing is also conducive to flight. The measures of wing loading and aspect ratio for Archaeopteryx are both within the range of modern birds that can perform powered flight. The former is a ratio of mass to wing area. For flight, there needs to be a relatively low mass compared to the wing area. The latter is a ratio of wing length to wing width, where it is more conducive to flight to have a greater wing length relative to its width. It is important to note here, however, that a high aspect ratio, as seen in Archaeopteryx, is also an effective attribute for improving gliding performance in birds. Now, relating to the musculature of the wing, as mentioned earlier, Archaeopteryx lacked the pulley system seen in modern birds. However, analysis has shown that the length of muscle and the angle of attachment to the shoulder would have still allowed for a reasonable amplitude and strength of the wing beat. In summary for this section, the wing and bone properties of Archaeopteryx consistently match the unique combination seen in volant birds that use short distance flapping flight. When some of these parameters are placed in a statistical model called a phylogenetic principal component analysis, it can distinguish a bird that can fly from one that can't with 95.5% accuracy. Running this analysis for Archaeopteryx aligns it with the flying group.
Development of flight.
In my opinion, based on the evidence, Archaeopteryx was a wing-propelled flyer. But how did this come to be? There are two main hypotheses for the development of avian-like flight: arboreal and cursorial. The arboreal hypothesis posits that flight developed from adaptations to slow descent and extend the length of leaps as creatures move through the forest canopy. In other words, flight developed from tree-dwelling ancestors. In this model, flapping of wings is initially developed for lift, being the upwards force, and then later for thrust, being the forward-propelled motion. For the cursorial hypothesis, it's the opposite. This posits that wing flapping first evolved to assist running locomotion, thus being for the initial purpose of thrust, and then later being adapted for lift. It's important to note, however, that these two paths of development aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. They could have both contributed to flight development in Archaeopteryx if it was an organism that exploited both arboreal and terrestrial environments. Either way, from the alignment of Archaeopteryx with the burst form of flight, we can infer that in a scenario such as predator evasion, they likely would have had an explosive takeoff from either the ground or tree, followed by a horizontally dominant flight over a short distance, and then a return to the ground or tree to complete the next part of the escape, on foot. And a quick aside here, the change in flight stroke that has occurred between Archaeopteryx and the birds of today can logically be related to the development of a more vertical rather than horizontal takeoff. There was one more area of evidence, however, that I found to support the cursorial over the arboreal hypothesis. And to look into it, we have to take a detour to talk about the breeding and nesting behaviour of Archaeopteryx.
Nesting and breeding, implications for the development of flight.
All Archaeopteryx specimens have been found in the same geographic location, and also in the same general pose. This pose is consistent with that of a nesting position and is supported by the identification of egg remnants and hatchling remains around these sites. The eggs themselves were 1 to 1.4 centimetres long, which fits with the size of the pelvic opening in the Archaeopteryx specimens. This size is comparable to those laid by the goldcrest, the UK's smallest living bird. Interestingly, these eggs appeared to have been soft, or at least possessed movable segments, rather than having solid shells. What's even more interesting is that the evidence suggests that at least 100 eggs were laid by an individual in a single reproduction cycle, with more than one wave of egg brooding and hatching occurring during this. This may seem like a lot, but when you compare the total volume, i.e. the size of an egg multiplied by the number of eggs, and compare it to the body mass of the animal itself, it is comparable to what a modern bird would lay. Archaeopteryx seem to have laid a greater number, but of smaller eggs, compared to other similarly sized birds. A greater number of eggs and shorter gestation times are generally associated with altricial or only semi-precocial young, thus indicating that juvenile Archaeopteryx were not terribly independent at birth. So what does all this tell us about how flight may have developed? Well, the pattern of egg littering discovered indicates that Archaeopteryx was a ground nester, and that the same site was used repeatedly. All of this evidence suggests that the area where the specimens were found is that of a colonial breeding ground. This would lend support to the idea that feathers and wings originally developed for breeding purposes, to cover and conceal the large number of eggs and hatchlings, and to help retain moisture for the maintenance of the soft, pliable shells. It provides evidence that flight developed from the ground up as a secondary function, thus supporting the cursorial hypothesis.
Archaeopteryx!
And there we have it, episode 13 of the Blurbs podcast is done and dusted. The inspiration for this episode came from the book The Life of Birds by David Attenborough that I was given for Christmas. Not surprisingly, there was a really fascinating section in there all about Archaeopteryx. And man, I gotta say, this was a mentally taxing episode to create. I loved it, but understanding and piecing everything together definitely took me a while. So, I'd like to shout out the Science of Birds podcast episodes Feathers, Form and Function, How Birds Fly, and Bird Bones, the Avian Skeleton. These really helped me to get the terminology and concepts straight in my head. I'm currently managing to get one episode out per month because, just like anyone with a passion project, I'm employed full-time and work on this in the evenings when I have some energy left, and on the weekends.
But you, good friend, could change all that.
to help me fulfill what I think is a realistic goal of turning this into a part-time job, please consider supporting on Patreon at patreon.com/blurbs439. The link is in the show notes alongside the references used to inform this episode. Once I have enough support, I can start to dedicate one or two workdays a week to this project and get content out faster. Either way, I really appreciate you listening. I'd be so grateful if you'd consider sharing this with another bird-loving friend, and I hope you've found the topic as interesting as I have. I'm actually going to buy myself a book on paleoornithology as a reward for publishing this episode, if that's any indication of how interesting I found it. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. Blurbs.